Welcome back. It is the Burns and Gambo Show here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader, and obviously the news of the week, the news of the month, maybe even the news of the year, is the Arizona Coyotes franchise relocating to Salt Lake City as part of a sale, and obviously all the emotions and all of the news that comes from that. Gambo has been at the forefront of reporting some of this news over the last couple of weeks, and joining us right now in studio here on the Burns and Gambo Show, the now former owner of the Arizona Coyotes, I believe that's the correct way to refer to Alex Morello, but if I am referring to you incorrectly, I apologize for that. Alex, thank you for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you to be on your show, both of you individuals. I appreciate it, and I still own the team. So it has gone from being active to inactive, okay. But I currently on the team as we speak.
So to refer to you as the owner of the Coyotes would still be accurate because you are the owner of that property as we know it, right?
That is correct.
Okay, great.
Thank you, Mr. Morello. We really appreciate you coming in and Javier coming in as well. Thank you. Final home game on Wednesday night at Mullet Arena. A lot of emotions were very high. A lot of people are very sad right now. But I just want to get your feeling. You weren't at the game, and I just want to understand why. Why did you choose to stay away from that game that night?
Well, I didn't choose. I was still working out until this morning. I was working on the deal and getting all the logistics and all the paperwork done, corrected. And it was a process that went all the way through this morning. I watched the game on TV, and it just made me, it was gut-wrenching. It was just so much enthusiasm. It confirms what I already know, that hockey belongs in the desert, and that's what we plan on doing so in the future, in the near future.
A lot of people, they're angry over the loss of their hockey team, which you can understand, fans, employees, stadium workers. And I know in some ways it's affected you and your family, and I want you to answer that too, because I think a lot of people don't understand how it's affected you and your family. But what responsibility do you feel you need to take in their pain right now, and then how has it affected you personally?
Well, look, of course it's affecting my family, but I don't really, you know, that's part of the sports, right? What's really bothering me is, of course, the fans. That's the most important part to me. And to address the fans is to understand that I didn't just sell out the team. I'm here. I'm committed. I am fully committed to going forward with the process of reactivating the team, which begins June 27th when I purchased the land auction. I think that is the most important part the fans need to know is that I understand it sucks, it's heartbreaking, and with that, we have plans to move forward. I think it's also important, again, is I didn't sell the team. I could have moved on. I'm committed. I love Arizona. I love the team, and we're going to make this project a reality come June 27th.
Ultimately, Alex, what convinced you that this was the right move? Who convinced you? What convinced you? What set of circumstances made you decide this is what needs to be done? And kind of walk us through the timeline of that a little bit from your perspective.
Well, what happened was I had never had any intention of selling the team. It was never I've been offered for the time I got here to just recently if I was interested in selling a team, and it's always been, no, I'm not interested in selling the team. What happened was that Bill Daly and Gary Bettman came on March 6th to visit myself and basically said, what are you doing? What's the future of the team? And I kind of felt like they were asking me if I wanted to sell the team, and I said, absolutely, I'm not interested in selling the team. That's not going to happen. And they said to me, can you look your players in the eyes and tell them when they can expect to have a new arena built? And I looked at them and stared and said, no. He goes, it's not fair to the players, to their families, and to hockey operations not knowing how long it will take to build this arena. Most of these players, on average, have a career of 4 to 5 years. They've already played 2 years. It could be another 3, 4, 5 more years, and it's not fair to them. It took me a while to understand that, probably a week or so, a lot of soul-searching, thinking, and praying. And they're right. I just can't do that. It's not fair to them. It's not fair to the NHL. It's not fair to anybody. And that's why I made that decision. Let's be clear. The reason I did this is because I told them I am not going to sell the team. We have to work out a plan that makes sense for everyone so I can continue to move forward with the team over a period of time. And that's when they decided to go, it's not an expansion team, it's more of a inactive to activating again, and the process begins on June 27th.
I don't want to spend too much time looking in the rearview mirror and would rather look through the front windshield here, but I am curious from your perspective, given that it was less than a year ago, What do you think went wrong in Tempe with the vote, with the vote that was last May? What got sideways on that one from your perspective?
Look, when the public does not understand and they believe that all you got to say is a billionaire tax help or giving free money to a billionaire, they don't go for it. And even though it's not true, I'm not asking for anything. I wasn't asking for any tax abatements or help from the public in constructing the arena. They didn't, for whatever reason, they didn't understand that and they didn't accept it. But it's funny because now you've got the Kansas City Chiefs, who just recently have won two Super Bowls.
Lost the vote.
And lost the vote. That tells you everything you want to know. The public doesn't understand it. If they think it's some kind of a tax abatement or free money for a billionaire, they're opposed to it.
I'm going to follow up on that. What would you say then? What would you say is the biggest mistake in this team right now relocating to Utah over the last few years? What was the biggest mistake that led us to this point?
Look, I would say it really starts from the beginning. There's not one mistake. It starts from the beginning. They come here and they play in Phoenix Arena, which had so many seats.
4,500, a limited view, couldn't work.
Correct. There were so many obstructed views of seats that they had to relocate to Glendale. Glendale was another mistake because it was so far away from the public and the fans that they could never generate the attendance that was necessary. So that was another failure. It just didn't work. I was basically kicked out. No, I was kicked out of the arena. They asked me to sign for 20 years, and I said I wouldn't do that. And when I said no, they said they would kick me out. I didn't think they would do it, and they did. They thought for sure I would never have enough time to relocate it to a different city in the East Valley, and they were wrong. I went to Tempe. During that 2 years in Tempe, I've seen numbers I've never seen before. It's been extremely successful, and we've generated more revenues, not even close to what we were doing at Gila, for 18,000 seats versus the 4,400 we have at Tempe. So I am convinced that hockey works in the desert.
How realistic is it? Because a lot of people are going to ask this question. How realistic is it that hockey will return to the desert? And what, in your mind, what has to happen for this team to be reactivated within 5 years?
It starts June 27th with the land auction. Once I purchase that land, then we move forward with the city of Phoenix and all the city officials and the city itself, and I need their commitment and their help to making sure that this project cannot happen by itself. It's a huge undertaking that, as we know, any sports project like this, the city has to come in and work with us.
I think it's really important that you are speaking today. So again, I do appreciate it because I think it's important for the fans to hear from you. One of the things that we've heard, and I'm sure you've heard, is from fans and media is that, okay, he had an NHL team. He lost the team, documented of not paying bills late. Why should everyone trust that you're going to get this done the right way?
Well, first of all, I already said that I have the team. It's currently now inactive as opposed to activated. So the team is still there. In regards to me getting the commitment or having the fans feel comfortable, look, I believe in actions, not words. And the actions start come June 27th. As far as paying the bills, it's impossible to be in business for 40 years and not pay my bills.
Alex Morello is our guest here on the Burns and Gambo show. If I may, I'd like to ask you a couple of questions about this land bid coming up on June 27th, because I'm very curious about it. First and foremost, let's get this kind of out there and on the record. If for whatever reason you don't win the bid, is that it? Is that your, for lack of a better way of describing it, the last straw when it comes to your ability to build an arena here? And how does that amplify the importance of the June 27th date for you?
You can never say that's it, but to me, I am fully focused and committed on buying that land June 27th, and it's very important that that happens.
Is there a price that's too high for the land if there is an auction on it, if there are other bidders who show up?
If other bidders show up, make sure you deposit your money, get your paddle, and we'll bid one against another.
A follow-up to both of those questions, if I may, and I have not heard this speculated upon or addressed, so I'm very, very curious. If, for whatever reason, you get the land and some unforeseen circumstance pops up that prevents you from building there, You have 5 years. Would you renounce your reactivation rights before the end of the 5 years if you come to realize that you don't have the opportunity to build an arena here, be it because you don't win the land bid or because the government officials are not cooperating in a way that you would want? Would you make the choice to not use the full 5 years to attempt to reactivate the organization?
No, I would sit down and work with the NHL office and explain to them what's going on and make sure we can work a different plan or different ideas so we can move forward with this purchase. Okay, but really the development of the project.
So you're going to use the full 5 years.
Yes.
That is absolutely.
My intent is to use the full 5 years.
Okay.
And not only that, but work with the NHL. And you will see tomorrow during the interviews and the statement that we're going to have with Gary Bettman and myself, you'll see the commitment from Gary, how important it is to him, because he believes in Arizona. And he's right. He's been here for 20 years, constantly advocating for the hockey team. And he's told me when I first bought the team that this is his dream, and he's had so much invested. We are all committed on getting this thing done.
The Coyotes have had 8 different owners, and I do think that there is sins of the past that you have had to deal with. I totally do, with the way this all went out. But it does seem that a lot of the owners have cared more about the real estate portion of it than the team itself. So give me your perspective. Do you care as much about the team as the real estate, and why do they have to go hand in hand?
Well, I care about the team and the arena. That's the first thing that will be built. So to answer your question, I'm all in for the Coyotes, the fans, and the arena. With that, usually, if you can create or build a district, it makes it more financially viable. But you've got to start with the arena, period.
A lot of people ask the question, do you have the financial ability for this project? And what help will you need from the city of Phoenix to get this across the finish line and bring Coyote hockey back to Arizona?
So I already had the financing in place before this deal went down. So you can imagine now I've got a huge war chest to get the project built. So financially, not a problem. What I need from the city, this project is too big. It's transformational. We will need cooperation from the city to help me make this dream, this project, a reality. And they know what that means. It comes with permitting. There'll be a lot of decisions that have to be made, but it's all within their spectrum, and they can make it happen if they want to.
But you're saying all along, no taxes on this, right?
I'm saying I do not need any tax assistance. That is correct. I have my own money. I don't need the public money to get this arena built.
How about as far as the infrastructure is concerned? Would that be a tax district of some sort that could assist in the infrastructure that would take place around the arena?
That is correct. That's correct. So number one is you need the city to be involved when it comes to the process and the permitting. That is normal. And then, of course, the city also, there's a law, a state law that was enacted a couple of years ago that is a theme park district that conveys my purchase of land to the district, and then that has different advantages when it comes to what we need for the arena and different aspects. I don't know all the information.
But it's not a tax. You don't look at it as a tax.
It is not a tax. It is not a tax on the taxpayer, public.
Okay, so in some ways, this is very much like, I know every time I go to Italy every year and I sit down at a table, there's a coperta. There's a tax. It's $4 to sit at this table, and that's what I have to pay. Is that what it would be? The users of the facility would pay something that would go into the project to support the infrastructure?
That is correct. That's exactly right.
Okay. Alex Morello is our guest here on the Burns and Gambo show. I'll follow up just on the Phoenix element of this if I could. Generally, when taking the temperature of the officials that you've spoken to so far about this, what is your read on their willingness to cooperate with you, to help with you, and how far have those conversations gone so far with the city of Phoenix?
I have not personally spoken to any official yet. I've had Javier Gutierrez and a few of the people who work with me comment on that. I believe they're supportive, but I personally want to meet with the mayor. I think we have a date soon, and the city officials, and make sure they understand who I am, what I stand for, and how this project is so important and opportunistic for the city of Phoenix.
You mentioned the commitment of the commissioner of the NHL, Gary Bettman, in a statement that was released announcing the sale. He reaffirmed that commitment. Tell me and tell our listeners, if you will, about your relationship with him and his commitment to seeing this through and getting this done. How confident is he in you, in your ability to use these 5 years and get what ultimately everybody wants, a new arena and the NHL back in the Valley?
First of all, he is extremely committed. He's got 28 years invested into this opportunity and this hockey team in Arizona. He's extremely committed. As far as me, he knows that I am the only one that can get this project done. He's told me before, and on a couple occasions, if it doesn't work with me, it won't work with anybody. He's very supportive. You'll see that tomorrow. And I can tell you that I agree with him, and we're very engaged working together every day on this, and I believe we can make this happen.
What will you do to keep the Coyote name and image alive over these next 5 years? We've talked about Roadrunner Hockey coming to the Mullet Arena, and I know they've got a lease agreement that you're probably going to have to work all of that out. But what can you do over 5 years to make sure that hockey has a presence? There's so many youth hockey programs in Arizona that are thriving. What will you do to keep the presence of the Coyotes alive and to keep youth hockey and programs alive?
So when this transaction takes place and it's basically done, we plan on keeping all the hockey, when it comes to business operations, intact. I also kept in this deal, which never happens, I kept the AHL team that plays currently in Tucson, and we're going to move them up to, well, the arena. The youth hockey will stay as is, and I will be underwriting that, which is a very important thing because there's so many thousands of kids, boys and girls, and families that depend on this, and it's very important to me. The foundation, the Coyotes Foundation, will stay in place. So I would say the best way to look at it is the only thing that I've really done is I sent the players in hockey operations to Utah. Everything will stay the same with the Coyote logo, all the IP. All that comes with it that I currently have will stay intact.
But you do understand, and I think this is really important to just to get your feeling on it for the fans. The players that they loved, the players that they bought jerseys for, the players that they were invested in, they're gone. The Coyotes' history is going to go to Utah. You may be able to keep the name and start, and you will have to have an expansion draft. There'll be all new players. What do you say to those fans that have lost their team, their identity, their favorite players? What would you say to them?
It's horrible. I apologize. It's something that I tried at every cost to avoid. And what I take solace is understanding that more importantly is the career of these players. To keep them here in a campus facility for another 3 or 4 years was not right. And that's what I think that's the most important thing, that I had to come to realization that no matter how much I love these players, and I sat down with them, I spoke to them, several of the players and the team leaders of the players, and it was a long conversation. It was very emotional in many aspects because these are my kids. I along with Bill Armstrong and my son, handpicked these individuals the last 3 or 4 years. To see them moving on is gut-wrenching. But it's not fair to them or their families.
Everybody learns from their mistakes. We all do. What will you do differently the next time? When you look at the last 5 years, and obviously you took over and the pandemic came, and again, I mean, you were in a tough spot right there. What will you do differently the next time professional hockey is here in Arizona?
That's a hard question to answer, but I can tell you this. What I will do differently, and what I said from day one, I don't believe, and I've seen it before the last several years at Gila, that the way it was situated, the Coyotes in Phoenix, in Glendale, did not work. And my goal is to do what has to be done from day one. It's built the Coyotes a facility, an arena they should be proud of, that they can call their house, their home. And that is what I want to do, what I've been thinking from day one. That's what I think is the most important part of the Coyotes' future and for the fans.
So you want to win, like the Invelic, this team has had a low payroll every year, and part of it is because of the financial situation. New team, new start, new beginning, new arena, the finances will be there to put a competitive winning team on the ice?
Well, it's a lot easier when you're at 18,000 or 17,000 seat arena as opposed to 4,000. It's not the same, right? It's hard to compete financially when you're at a disadvantage during the entire league. So no matter how you look at it, it was almost impossible because you're operating at a, at most teams are at 20,000 capacity. I'm operating at 4,000, 4,400 seat capacity. It was impossible to really compete where I wanted to be.
I'll leave you with this because I want to just give you an opportunity to thank the fans for the support and say whatever you may want to say to them. But a lot of hockey fans are listening. A lot of Coyote fans are listening. We carry the broadcast here on this station. What would you say to your fan base right now about everything that's going to happen and about what the future may hold?
It's very emotional. It's very difficult for me personally. I understand. I try and understand what you're going through because to have your team or your players moved is very difficult. And I'm not professing I will ever have that same understanding. I can tell you as a huge fan of the Coyotes, I feel your pain. As an owner, it's extremely difficult. But from here on out, what you need to understand is that I have not sold the actual team. I've kept everything I could explain during the conversation. That June 27th will be the start of a new beginning for the Coyotes and what we want to do. And to, I also would like to say to believe me, but I believe, I also understand believing is actions. It's not words, it's actions. And you will see that start June 27th.
So putting a winning team on the ice, spending, you know, above the ceiling on the cap and putting the right pieces in place to secure a winning organization here in Arizona. Tell me about that.
Yes, absolutely. As we've been talking during the conversation, I want you to understand that during my tenure last 4 years, we've done all the right things to make sure we had the draft picks and get our team to be a winning organization, and we have done that. And I'm very proud of that. Can we do it again? Absolutely, we can do it again. And more importantly now, as we move forward into a new arena, building the state, you know, first-class, state-of-the-art arena, we can now spend what it takes to win a championship, to win a Stanley Cup, and that is to the cap and beyond the cap as necessary. We believe we can do that now with this new facility.
That's something that fans are going to want to hear. Thank you.
Thank you.
We wish you the best, and we're pulling for you, and we hope that you deliver on those promises and bring hockey back, because as you guys have said all along, hockey belongs in the desert. We all believe it, and we support your efforts to bring hockey back to Arizona because it belongs here.
Thank you very much for both of you guys.
Thank you, Alex. We appreciate the time. Thank you.
It's Alex Morello joining us here on the Burns and Gambo Show, the owner still of the intellectual property that is the Arizona Coyotes, and with every intention of winning the land bid on June 27th to begin the process of building an arena, and that 5 years from now, the Coyotes will make their return as it happens in professional sports. Got a lot to unpack from that, a lot to react to. We'll play back some of the parts from it that stood out to us the most. We'll react to what Alex Morello had to tell us here on the Burns and Gambo Show. That's next on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Hey, it's Vince Murata. Join us on Friday morning and we'll explore the question, did the D-backs indeed pick the ball up in San Francisco? That and more starting at 6 on Arizona Sports.
Welcome back to the Burns and Gambo Show on this Thursday. The official announcement coming down from the NHL about 2 hours ago, indicating that indeed the Coyotes hockey operations has been sold to Salt Lake City and Ryan Smith, and that the business side of things remain here with a 5-year reactivation window that has opened up. And we just wrapped up our interview with Alex Morello, yeah, who joined us in studio. What was the first thing you think of when I ask you about that conversation? What pops into your mind?
There's two things. I think there's a disconnect where he really thinks like the we didn't lose the team. I still own the team. It's still the Coyotes. And I had to come at one point and say, look, the players are gone. The history's gone. Like, that's gone. Like, the team's lost. Like, I thought early on he was making it seem like, well, I didn't lose the team. I still own the team. And we're going to do this. We're going to do that. And we're still.
That's a great point.
And I had to come back later in the interview and say, Alex, like, the players are gone. All the players that everybody loved, the jerseys that were bought, the fans' favor. Like, the history of the organization, it's gone now. Like, you got to recognize that. It's I kept the team. No, you didn't keep the team.
Yeah. Yeah,
and I had to come back to... He said that early, but, you know, when you're doing an interview, it's me. I'll ask two questions, you ask two. So sometimes we don't, we don't follow up, like, with seven straight. So I had to go back to that one just to kind of, like, get his point on, like... Okay, yeah, you kept the name, but the players are gone.
Yeah.
The history's gone. The fans, the team that they adored is no longer here.
There was an awkwardness at the beginning of the conversation because I didn't quite know how to refer to him as.
I still own the team. So it has gone from being active to inactive,
okay.
But I currently on the team
okay.
as we speak.
So to refer to you as the owner of the Coyotes would still be accurate because you are the owner of that property as we know it, right?
That is correct.
I referred to him as the former owner of the Coyotes, and I asked him, "Is that correct?" He's like, "No, I'm the owner." But to your point, that's, I think, where that clarification
I had
was
to get that
needed.
Out there because
yeah.
I really wanted time to understand. Like, no, like, they're gone. Like, the team's gone. The players are gone. The other thing is, I will say this. I didn't like his answer to why he wasn't at the Mullet Arena on Wednesday night.
Let me play that for everybody.
I didn't choose. I was still working out to this morning. I was working on the deal and getting all the logistics and all the paperwork done, corrected. And it was a process that went all the way through this morning. I watched the game on TV, and it just made me... It was gut-wrenching. It was... just so much enthusiasm. It confirms what I already know, that hockey belongs in the desert, and that's what we plan on doing so in the future, in the near future.
So I didn't like that answer. I did want to ask him why he was not at the Mullet Arena. Why were you not there with the fans? And, you know, he said he had all this other paperwork and again didn't get done until early in the morning. Okay, like, I mean, I can't, like, that's what he said. Like, that was his answer. But I needed to ask that question. Why were you not at the Mullet Arena for the final game?
Yeah, that was good. There were a couple of things that I took away from it. I mean, this is a longer cut. I want to play this one. And this is the Gary Bettman looked me in the eye and said, be honest with me. Can you tell me this team isn't going to be in a college arena 3 years from now? And that's ultimately what made him decide to do this.
What happened was I had never had any intention of selling the team. It was never I've been offered for the time I got here to just recently if I was interested in selling the team, and it's always been, no, I'm not interested in selling the team. What happened was that Bill Daly and Gary Bettman came on March 6th to visit myself and basically said, what are you doing? What's the future of the team? And I kind of felt like they were asking me if I wanted to sell the team, and I said, absolutely, I'm not interested in selling the team. That's not going to happen. And they said to me, can you look your players in the eyes and tell them when they can expect to have a new arena built? And I looked at them and stared and said, no. He goes, it's not fair to the players, to their families, and to hockey operations not knowing how long it will take to build this arena. Most of these players, on average, have a career of 4 to 5 years. They've already played 2 years. It could be another 3, 4, 5 more years, and it's not fair to them.
Now, I do wonder, in listening back to that now, like, okay, he had this, the light came on and he had this moment of clarity where he went, you know what, you're right, I can't look my players in the eye. But was he coerced by the league into selling the team because of that? You know, would he have held on if there wasn't pressure upon the league? Hey, if the answer is no, then you got to move on. You got to sell, right?
Well, he had to get the right to reactivate the franchise in 5 years in order to agree to that. So he understood that he needed to let the team go, but he wanted something, and that was the ability to reactivate the franchise.
Yeah,
dangle the carrot that Bettman dangled out there.
And then the other thing was, and I thought about this morning when we kind of were getting an idea that we were going to have him on the show today, and that was, what happens if you lose the bid? You know, what happens if it doesn't go the way you want it to? What happens if you don't win the land bid?
You can never say that's it, but to me, I'm fully focused and committed on buying that land June 27th, and it's very important that happens.
Is there a price that's too high for the land if there is an auction on it, if there are other bidders who show up?
If other bidders show up, make sure you deposit your money, get your paddle, and we'll bid one against another.
Because at some point, right, like, you do wonder, if it gets too high, does he say no? You know, does he say, he's making it sound like the answer is no, that there is no price that is too high for him to win that land. But And then I thought the other thing I really wanted to know, too, was let's say you get the land, but Phoenix is giving you static. Or you get the land, but it's too expensive and you can't build the arena. You've got a five-year window here. Will you renounce your sole rights for reactivation before the end of the 5 years to clear a path for somebody else other than you to own the team?
They said he would talk to the NHL about it.
He said, I would work with the NHL with a new plan, but I plan on using all 5 years to try to get that arena. And I just, if he runs into a stone wall in this North Phoenix property, there might be a very compelling reason for him to say, you know what, forget it, I'm out, this is not going to work. But he is saying he will not do that.
I had to make sure that I asked them that, look, there are a lot of fans that are angry right now. A lot of people are angry, fans, employees, stadium workers, and what responsibility do you bear? And it seemed to me like he almost like teared up a little bit when he answered that question. But I asked him, like, what responsibility do you take in their pain right now? Like,
of course, it's affecting my family, but I don't really, you know, that's part of the sports, right? What's really bothering me is, of course, the fans. That's the most important part to me. And to address the fans is to understand that I didn't just sell out the team. I'm here. I'm committed. I am fully committed to going forward with the process of reactivating the team, which begins June 27th when I purchase the land auction. I think that is the most important part the fans need to know, is that I understand it sucks. It's heartbreaking. And with that, we have plans to move forward. I think it's also important, again, is I didn't sell the team. I could have moved on. I'm committed. I love Arizona. I love the team. And we're going to make this project a reality come June 27th.
Let me ask you what I think is the money question for the two of us. Okay? And I'll give my answer too. Do you feel better about this market's ability to have a hockey team 5 years from now after that 20-minute conversation we just had? Better, worse, or the same?
He kept saying, my words aren't going to mean anything, and I think that that's true. It's his actions. Win the bid on the 27th, and there's a chance hockey returns. Don't win the bid on the 27th, and there's no chance it's going to return under him. So I don't know. Like, I mean, do
well,
I mean,
he didn't say that though. He said
he's going to win the bid.
If something happens that he'll work with the NHL to find some other option.
I hope he wins. To get a hockey back right now, this guy's your best option, whether you like it or not. He is your best option to bring hockey back because he's got a 5-year exclusive right to bring to reactivate the franchise that he negotiated. I mean, I asked him, why should people trust him? That was one of the questions, was the trust factor and that thing. And, eight different owners. And I asked about the land deal. Why did everybody care more about the land than the arena? And he put his point out on that as well. I asked him if he had the financial ability to pay for the project. But I did ask him about trust. Like, can you be trusted to do this? And all indications from that interview is that, this is what I take from it, to answer your question. Every indication that I could take from that interview is that he's got every intention to go win that land bid on June 27th, build this project with the arena in place, and bring NHL hockey back within 5 years. I don't think that, like, there was a part of me that wanted to say, do you want to just take the $1 billion and walk away? But he just wasn't going down that path.
No, he wasn't
going to
go
so
there.
I have it written down, why not just take the $1 billion and go away? But he had never at any point did he ever steer me in that direction, because he was always focused on winning a land bid, bringing the team back. I still own the team. We're going to bring the Roadrunners to Mullet.
Yeah.
So I didn't get the feeling like, okay, why not just take the $1 billion and go away?
Let me tell you what I think. I think I have no doubt of his intention to buy that land, to win that bid. He seems very convicted that I'm bring your paddles, get ready to go. We're going to go. We're going to win it. I am very concerned about the city of Phoenix element of all of this, and how he still has convincing he needs to do. This is not as simple as buying a plot of land, winning the auction, and building an arena. It's not. There is a city of Phoenix government politics type element that is still required for this to work. And I think that's where every Coyotes arena proposal in the history of mankind always seems to run into problem when it turns into politics. right? When it becomes a political issue and not just a business transaction. I don't have any reason to think this is going to be any different. I don't have any reason to think that he's going to get to the city of Phoenix portion of this and he's going to find roadblock after roadblock after roadblock. And I just don't know if he's got, he's going to have an answer for that, you know, whether he wins the land or not. That interview didn't make me feel any better about that element of it. You know, I feel better about his conviction to buy the land. I don't think there's any doubt he's buying that land.
It's fair.
I have doubt about Phoenix's ability to go along with this, and I don't know if this can happen without Phoenix's ability to go along with it.
Yeah,
that's my point.
I'm, you know, there's a lot of people that know a lot more about the tax districts and the stadium districts and the theater districts than I do, and I've tried to educate myself on it because he says no new taxes, no new taxes. But it does seem like if a district is given, if they do create that district, that you can collect taxes inside of that district and use it to pay for all the infrastructure that's going to have to go on through the city of Phoenix.
When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, Monty Austin Fort and Jonathan Gannon met with the media today, pre-draft press conference with the draft 1 week away in the National Football League. And we teased this a little bit earlier in the show. It's all wide receiver, wide receiver, wide receiver. What if the Cardinals go a different direction with their first pick in the first round? We'll give you some options next on the Burns and Gambo show.
Hey, it's Wolf. NFL analysts believe the 2024 NFL Draft is the Arizona Cardinals' moment. So what do we believe will set up this franchise for years to come? We get going tomorrow at 10 a.m. It's Wolf and Luke on Arizona Sports.
Cardinals GM Monty Austin Fort earlier today.
We want to come out of here adding the right players, talented players who fit what we're trying to do. And then really it's going to be come in here and see what they can do. You know, nobody that we draft is going to be coming in here and handed anything. They're going to have to come in here and earn a spot. And so, you know, that's no different this year. So whoever that we pick is going to have to come in here and prove their value to the team, carve out a role, and show us how they're going to help us win.
It was the annual pre-draft press conference that we always get from the Cardinals, usually about a week or so before the draft. And you, as with anything this time of year, you try to kind of parse through it and see what is real, what isn't. I think this was the press conference where Bruce Arians once just completely totally lied to our face, right? Oh, we're not taking a quarterback, and then they took Logan Thomas.
I lie good.
So it's, you know, and it's fine. We're way too thick-skinned to get all upset about something like that. We understand the game and we get how it goes. But something you said earlier about the draft, which is crazy enough a week from today. I mean, it's with this Coyote story and the Suns and the T-Wolves. Man, it's just time is flying right now. It's one of my favorite times of year in sports. You mentioned something earlier in the show about this idea of the Cardinals and kind of what you've come to understand. Like, if they do trade out of four, okay. Number one, there's got to be enough ammunition to be able to trade back up, and it's still a net positive for
them.
Still
a net positive.
And then number two, they've got to be comfortable of trading back, and there's not anybody to trade up with, that nobody wants to take the bait, and they have to be comfortable with where they are just in case nobody wants to do a trade-up scenario with them. Then you mentioned the teams that are kind of trade back in targets for the Cardinals.
Yes, I gave you four teams.
I mentioned the Chargers at five,
yes.
The Titans at seven,
Atlanta,
the Falcons at eight,
Bears.
The Bears at nine.
Those would teams okay. That would be teams that the Cardinals would target to come back to.
Now,
all inside the top 10,
everybody
Burnsy.
Out there. Okay,
all inside the top 10.
But that only matters to a point.
Yeah.
Because you're probably not going to be able to get Malik Nabers or Rome Odunze if you're eight's probably the best you could hope for. Maybe ninth. Probably not. I think maybe you get one of those wide receivers, but you are not guaranteed of getting one of those three wide receivers unless you go to five or maybe even seven, and that's it. So what's the contingency plan if they do move back in and the wide receivers are gone?
The Notre Dame offensive tackle.
Okay.
Joe Alt would be the target at if they're able to move back in and the top three wide receivers are gone. I would expect that Joe Alt from Notre Dame, the tackle, would be the number one priority for Arizona if all three wide receivers are gone.
I know you two are extremely busy in there. Extremely busy. Can I get me a little Joe Alt draft profile, please? Oh, do I get to guess?
While I stall, you want to guess who it is?
New GOG. Is it one of the OGs or is it one of the new folk around here at the station?
It would be a new G.
So a new G?
What's the new G's?
So the new G's are Lauren.
Okay.
Tyler Drake or who? Jeremy, that's right, Jeremy. Tyler Drake, Jeremy, or Lauren?
I'll go Lauren.
Ooh, put me down for Jeremy, please.
Joe Alt, offensive tackle, Notre Dame.
Viewed as one of the top tackle prospects in a loaded draft class, the 6'8", 321-pound Alt can get it done in both the run and pass game. While Alt, whose father was a Pro Bowl tackle in his own right, started 33 games at left tackle across three seasons at Notre Dame, the lineman is confident in his ability on the right side. Alt presents more than enough talent to become a day one starter at the NFL level. NFL comparison, Denver Broncos offensive tackle Mike McGlinchey.
This 2024 NFL Draft Player Profile is brought to you by Bud Light.
Sorry, Bud Light. We both lose. Neither one of us picked Tyler Drake, who is our Cardinals beat writer for ArizonaSports.com and also the co-host, along with Lauren, of the Cardinals Corner podcast, which is available at ArizonaSports.com. Yes, I get paid by the mention for that. Joe, also, you're telling me. Okay, so once again, just to reiterate, trade out of four, trade back up to five, you're going to get one of the wide receivers. You might get Marvin Harrison Jr. if you do that. Okay.
Yes.
Trade out of four, trade up to seven. Assuming quarterbacks go 1, 2, 3, 4, wide receiver goes fifth, wide receiver goes sixth, you're getting one of the three at seven. You go to 8 or you go to 9, you're guaranteed a nothing. You're not guaranteed any of those three wide receivers are there. Joe Alt, huh?
Joe Alt. There is no cornerback that would be top 10 worthy. You got the Alabama kid, the Toledo kid, the Clemson kid, all good picks, but those guys are going to go, you know, 12 to 20 probably. So if you're in that range, you're not going to get a cornerback. The edge rusher, Dallas Turner, could be an option as well. So if you're saying the top three wide receivers are gone, I would tell you that the pick would come down to Joe Alt or Dallas Turner. Now, I can't guarantee you at this point that Joe Alt is not ahead of one of the three wide receivers. I can't guarantee that to you.
So I
can't just say that the Cardinals board is going to be wide receiver, wide receiver, wide receiver, and Joe Alt. What I will tell you is based on the scenario you're telling me, if the three wide receivers are gone and they're inside the top 10, I would expect that Joe Alt would be the top option and then Dallas Turner would be the second option.
That's a little nugget right there. And I know you're not saying anything, but it's interesting to even think that the Cardinals could be sitting there at, let's say, number 7. And Rome Odunze is still available at number 7. He's the only wide receiver of the big three left. If the Cardinals were to go tackle instead of Rome Odunze, that would be interesting. Now, that would be a surprise. That would be a draw. That'd be a whoa. They didn't take one of the top. They traded out. They traded back in. They had a chance to take one of the wide receivers, and they chose not to. Interesting. Monty Austin Fort today said their draft board is just about done.
Again, we don't necessarily talk first round. It's not really a language we use. We talk about roles and where they fit on our team. You know, in terms of number of guys that we have on our board, you know, it's a little bit of a moving target. I mean, I'd say we have guys that are up there, but I would say, you know, there's a focus number that we're more interested in. You know, I wouldn't say it's an extensive number. We put these guys got to check a lot of boxes for us to be guys that we want to add to our program. So hard for me to give you a number on that, Josh.
Zero chance you're getting that answer.
Jonathan Cannon from the top rope. Zero chance you were going to get an answer to that question. He said the board is about 95% done.
Right.
And there's about 5% left of the work to do on it. And then starting next week, they'll discuss scenarios. If this and that, then what do we do? If that and this, then what do we do? We said that's kind of what next week is for, to go through a series of like mock draft exercises, basically, and kind of come up with a game plan so that if the first three quarterbacks are X, Y, and Z, and this team calls, what do we do? Or it's X, Y, and Z, and that team calls, what do we do? You know, so that they're they kind of work through those scenarios. It's fascinating. It was a really interesting conversation to listen to. I don't know how much of it is true, you know, because of the draft subterfuge, but it was really interesting to listen to, I thought.
I would just say that three wide receivers, they trade down, they move back up, the three wide receivers are gone. I would say the number one target would be Joe Alt, the number two target would be Dallas Turner.
When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, the 4 o'clock reset, the part of the show where we get you caught up on everything going on in sports with Mitch is next here on Burns and Gambo.